the town where the jazz is swinging high. It's the New Orleans Outsider with Chris Goffmeyer. Oh my, we may be outsiders, but our love for New Orleans is true. So come along as I share it all with you. Sights and sounds, food and drinks, we're here to take a ride with New Orleans Outsider as our guide.
And here are your hosts, Chris Goff, Peter Newkirch, and Justin Appleberry.
Well, last week we started with one of our favorite bars in New Orleans, and this week we start with a restaurant that I think I go there every single time now that I'm in New Orleans. If not, I'm batting at least probably 800, maybe 8 out of 10 times I'll be going to this restaurant, and that is Muriel's Jackson Square. So welcome to the NOLA Outsider Podcast. I'm Chris, along with Peter and Justin. And guys, this is a place we all love Muriel's, I know, because we've all gone there together. We've gone, I've gone with each of you individually, together, all of our wives, everyone. And this is a place that it's interesting to read about it online because, you know, I think it is, again, because it is attached to Jackson Square, it's looked at as a touristy place for those who want to be a little bit more, go deeper into the New Orleans food world. But man, I just don't think you can beat the ambiance and food, all of the full package of Muriel's. What do you think there, Justin?
Well, I think it's interesting that just because it happens to be popular with tourists, that it can't be a great place to dine. That seems odd to me. It is my favorite place to eat, and I've never missed going there once when I've been to New Orleans. And yeah, it's my favorite restaurant to eat at, maybe in the whole entire world.
Peter, we have gone there multiple times, and we're trying to work our way down the entire menu. I've gone through several, we'll talk about the Creole tomato menu I did once. So the Creole tomato festival menu that was several years ago, that was quite off the wall for me. But I know you have, especially being the foodie and former chef that you are, you really enjoy Muriel's.
Yeah, it's probably the most consistent restaurant. Maybe next to Commander's that we go to, as to it will always be a quality meal. And I agree with Justin, just because it's on Jackson Square doesn't mean that it's just full of tourists. And you get to sit there and be right in the middle of that historical, the most historical part of the city.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it so cool. I mean, you know, I love G.W. Finn's. And Commander's Palace is in a league of its own. But let's say I always say, you know, I will argue G.W. Finn's is one of my favorite meals in the French Quarter. But Muriel's, if I said, hey, who do you want to take somewhere that you think is like the full package? I think because I've always said GW Finn's sort of looks like a place that I could have in any like really nice town. It's a nice restaurant with awesome food, but I could sort of take the interior of that and plop it anywhere in America in many ways. But the Muriel's experience, like, let's talk about the first time we all went. The first time I went, I believe it was probably with our group of friends, Peter, that we've gone with Travis and Sarah, you, Charlotte, me, Stacy, whoever. And we went there, and it's, you know, I believe that was the time that our friend Travis and Sarah, they were staying at Place des Armes, which is right next to it, connected to it, which is an awesome hotel. We'll talk about that one day. But they were staying there. So, hey, we're going to Muriel's. It's right next door. So we go to Muriel's. And, you know, just walking in there, you can tell it's obviously upper level fine dining for someone just walking in with shorts and a t-shirt. There is a dress code. You can't wear hats, but that's about it. It's not as tight as Commander's Palace on that. But when you walk in, you see sort of the dividers between the tables. You see the different rooms, and sort of each room has a sort of a theme to it a little bit. But best of all, you get to see the huge windows that show the entire like Jackson Square corner and people walking around. And it's great for people watching. And I just remember that's what sort of sold me on the place, as the bottom level views and the way it looked and the way it sort of made you feel like, yes, I am in New Orleans.
I think it's, like I said, the most consistent place to go, where they, as everything within New Orleans, they are counting on the quality of the food and the service to be excellent, and it just happens to be right in the middle there of where everything started for that city. So they don't see it as, oh, we're making a restaurant that happens to be in a touristy area. They said, we're having this great restaurant that is there because of the history of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like, I remember the first time I walked in there, it was just the atmosphere I thought was just unique and uniquely New Orleans, right? Like when you walk into Muriel's, you know, you are in a New Orleans institution from the time you walked in there. And then when you get to tour around and see all the things that we'll get into during the episode, it's just the uniqueness of it. And then it's cheesy to say maybe, but it's not just a meal. It's sort of an experience. You know, you're there with all your friends, you're having a great time. Me and your wife, Stacy, always share a bottle of wine. You know, we kind of all have our little fun things to go along with it.
That's funny. My wife usually doesn't like to share wine, so it's nice that she does that with you.
I think I get half a glass.
Yeah. You get a taste. But when, you know, I think that it, Peter, to your point of it being where it's at, and you know, I think it's almost like held to a higher standard because it is in such a damn big foot area. You know, I mean, everyone is walking around there, and as we discussed before, that is the center of New Orleans. So to be able to have Muriel started in 2001. So we're talking about a quarter of a century here, pretty much in that location, and to have a foothold where they're at and have all that foot traffic around you right by the cathedral, which is basically where, you know, if you read the history of New Orleans, that's they were lining it out and putting the streets around sort of like they would do in France. And they had it all around a cathedral there. And that's what they were doing in New Orleans. And they have that building, which we'll talk about the history of it, because, man, they have a lot of history because of where it's located, just what has gone down in that place for the last couple hundred years. But I mean, just the amount of, you know, the level of and standard of food, of preparation, of just the, like you, like Justin said, the experience has to be so high because of where it's at, you know. And I think every time I'm there, although I have read, of course, the internet is great to finding all the negative reviews about everything. That, I mean, seriously, you could have anything and people say horrible things. I know this. I understand this. But when people say like, well, you know, it's okay. I've never had a bad experience at Muriel's. It's always been good. I mean, I'm sure it's consistency. I mean, I can't even really argue that. I think it's always been pretty good for me. What do you think, Peter?
I say consistency has always been top notch. That's as you know, you're going to go in there and get a good meal that is the same as just as good as the last time you went, and the next time you go it will be just as good. And they think they sit in a little bit of an odd place in time, in that in comparison to the classics of New Orleans, they're not they're not an old place. You know, we're not talking you know, Antoine's or Commander's, where, you know, the people are now, you know, 100 years, 100 plus years, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're not a brand new place that everybody wants to go to try out. So they don't quite hit that aged gentleman spot.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen the traffic that walks around there, Justin. I mean, there's just, like we were talking about, it's just amazing to see, you know, the standard that they've kept up there for, I know I've been going there for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, has been, you know, it's really off the charts.
So here's the interesting thing with me and Muriel's is I, probably like most people, will fall into the trap. Like I'll order the same thing at every restaurant I go to. Just like, I find something I like, I order it. I challenge myself every time I go to Muriel's to try something different. And there has not been a dish that has disappointed me yet.
No, you're right.
Peter, I don't know. They had the branzino? The
branzino.
Yeah, the branzino. Yeah, that's the first time I saw that on there. And I had that in Boston once, and it was fantastic when I had it at Muriel's.
And they do. They do a great job with that fish there. Yeah. They also are one of the few places where you can consistently get duck that they do well.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a lot of reasons why it's hard to do duck consistently for a place, and I don't get it every time, but when I have gotten it, I've always been very happy with the dish.
So Muriel's Jackson Square is located at 801 Charter Street, like I said, just on the corner of Jackson Square, right there, right next to the cathedral. If you're looking at cathedral, right to your right, I mean, is in a very prominent position in New Orleans. Some facts here. Sunday through Thursday, it is open for dinner 5 to 9:30. It does have a Saturday and Sunday brunch there. So a lot of times we want to go eat there for lunch on a weekday, and obviously it's not open until the night, so that sort of stinks. The bar is always fun to go to, too. We enjoy the bar. It's Sunday through Thursday. It's 3 to 9:30, and Friday and Saturday it's from 3 to 10:30. And the bar is always that's a pretty unique place, too. downstairs, sort of, you know, to the side of the seating area. But when you walk in there, you know, you have your server right there on the big double doors there, and your server's right there. And like I said, there's a huge sort of dining area to the left, a huge one to the right. I think I've sat in every nook and cranny in that place with you guys. And like I said, there's not really a bad seat in the house. It's always, you know, it's got the allure of a Commanders and, you know, GW Fins, where there are multiple people helping you all night. You know, that's one thing that I was not used to, being from Kansas City, going to a restaurant that was just so, you know, the experience, the ambiance, the just the whole thing was such a processional thing. You know, I mean, you know, you have 3 to 5 different servers helping you at a place, and that's just not something you're used to. So, you know, every time I go to Muriel's or Commander's or anything in New Orleans, I come back and I sort of explain these things to people that, you know, I don't eat this way at home, people. So I don't act like don't think I spend my life like going to these restaurants like this, because it's not at all. But when I'm there, it's definitely on a list where you can just walk in and have like such an experience eating. But let's, before we get to the menu, because I want to talk about their food, because they're speaking of consistency, I really feel like their menu has been more consistent than any place I've eaten at in New Orleans, as far as just what is on their menu every time we get to go there. They do swap some things in and out, but I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it, I guess they're sort of their motto, I feel. But the history that they have on their website is pretty interesting. 1721, that's when the design of the city was laid out. So like I said, they're designing it around sort of a normal French town. The cathedral was the central point. They started going around that. So Place des Armes was the name of Jackson Square at that time. That was what they called that area, which is why the hotel is called that, right next to Muriel's. Of course, they had the big fire in 1788, which, you know, did some damage in the French Quarter. And I've heard about this over time, just how much damage that really did to it. And it was interesting. They said when they were renovating Muriel's to start at the turn of the century here, they uncovered a lot of the original charred walls and beams, which I thought was super cool. I mean, this is kind of stuff you don't see in Kansas City or most other right. major towns. I mean, am I right here?
Yeah, the Good Friday fire, 1788, right?
1788,
yeah.
I mean, it was interesting to sort of, you know, on their website, they do a really good job of sort of stepping you through time and what all has been on that corner. You know, we discussed, like, for example, Fritzl's was built in 1831. You don't really have a lot of, like, history of, like, what was in that place left and right. But when you have such a prominent position like Muriel's does, they certainly have it, the history of who has owned that corner in different waves, that whether as a Poydras or, you know, Jean-Baptiste or whoever, it's been interesting to sort of go through the years. I mean, Civil War, the Poydras family owned it, and it ends up going all the way through to the 1900s, where it was basically, I found this interesting. They had made the building and converted it into a restaurant called the Spaghetti Factory in the mid-century 1900s. So I was like, is that the same spaghetti factory, Peter, that's in St. Louis and used to be in Kansas City? Is that a chain? I can't believe that.
I don't know what else it would be. Yeah. And I do find, yeah, they were popular for a while. So that's what it was.
I mean, I believe there's still one in St. Louis. Last I checked, I don't know if there's
there. I checked, there was.
Yeah. Well, in 1974 to 2000, the history was it became a chart house restaurant. It was there for 25 years. The bottom portion of the building during the 70s was known as Heritage Hall, was home of the Heritage Hall Jazz Band. And in 2000, the present, Muriel's Jackson Square opened on March 10, 2001. And they talk about an extensive restoration of the building from its glory in the mid-1800s. You know, they claim they tried to remain faithful to the original historical design. And a lot of the restoration was done under a National Historic Tax Credit as administered by the National Park Service, which operates in the French Quarter as a National Historical Park. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, I think
are they a National Historic Site?
I would assume they have to be considered that to get this kind of tax credit, I would assume, you know. Yeah. I mean, I would assume half the buildings down there are technically landmarks.
That's a good point.
I'm sure, yeah, they went through the process of getting it documented, and that's why they have such an extensive history that they know that they post, you know, going all the way back to from what it was built on. That's an impressive feat to do that with a building you know you're going to turn into a restaurant, to try and keep it original to what was actually a home, a house, a design of a house.
Oh yeah. And I mean, and just to think how much money that had to be dumped into that place. I mean, you know, just when you, when you're redoing these old buildings like this, man, I just had one, we had one built in, we had one, you know, my cousin was trying to start a restaurant here in our town here. And the building's, you know, maybe mid 1800s. And I mean, just the amount of money to, for that. And this is a fraction of the size of Muriel's, and where it's at and how much they had to dump into to be in a restaurant business, Peter, which I understand it's going to be better in New Orleans than other places because of where they're at and what they're serving. But man, to be able to put that much money into it, whether it's a national historic tax credit or just a private investor, that is quite the sum of money to try to get back.
Absolutely. And, you know, New Orleans does have that double-edged sword of being a restaurant town that, as we talked about in the last episode, respects those professions of being a cook and a chef, of being a wait staff, of being a bartender, but they hold their restaurants to such a much higher standard than anywhere else. We've seen plenty of places come and go that everybody sure thought they would be the next 100-year restaurant, and they're already, they're gone within a year or two.
Yeah. And the staff at Muriel's, I mean, I'm pretty much, I always see the same manager dude is there all the time. I see him. You knew what I'm talking about. He's sort of older guy, sort of bigger dude.
Bigger guy. And yeah.
He's slick back hair. Yep. I see him there all the time. I see the same staff there pretty consistently, maybe not as much as back in the Antoine days, but it's pretty consistent. And if you go to the website, you'll see some of the rooms they have for, you know, for rentals, for receptions. They have the Magnolia Room, the Cotillion, the Wine Room. Actually, my wife had a birthday there. Her sister had a birthday party for her in that room, which is upstairs. You probably pass it on the way to the seance room. It's sort of off to the right, and it's got, you know, bottles of wine all around it. And it's for a smaller party, let's say 10 or less. And you can get that for your birthday party. I think it was Jamie, Susan, and Stacy were all in there, and they've had pictured in there. And, you know, this is just to show you how much we've always loved Muriel's in different forms of fashion. And you can have private events there any day of the week if you want. But the courtyard and the bar, the indoor courtyard, are cool. And the bistro, of course, is where I'm talking about, the dining rooms that everyone eats right, in, yeah. that we usually go to.
So the question here now is, as we move forward with all the history, is what do we talk first, the food or the ghost? Chris, should we go on that?
Let's talk food. Let's talk about the food, because that's what we really love it for, first and foremost. And let's talk about their menu, because their menu, and correct me if you guys disagree with me, but you know, when you get your menu at Muriel's, it's a huge menu, and it's, you know, you have two pages, left and right page. And one page is always the a la carte stuff, which includes the appetizers, the entrees, desserts, and any sides you want. And then the other one always has their meal deal, you know, which is where you basically get to pick an appetizer, a main course, and a dessert for a price of usually it's somewhere between $50 and $60, which is pretty par for the course for a nice restaurant down there. So that on that page, though, they have changed some of their appetizers, but their main courses have stayed, I believe, the same since the day I walked in there to now, which it has their shrimp and grits, it has their pork chop, it has their chicken, and it has their pecan crusted drum, usually.
The drum, yep.
And I have had three of the four. I've never tried the chicken, but I'll just go for myself. I think when I first started going to Muriel's, shrimp and grits was the thing to try, followed by the drum. And I've loved both those things, and I can get those anytime. But it was Peter who told me that you need to try this pork chop. And of course I'm like, Peter, I'm not trying a pork chop in New Orleans. I live in Kansas City. I can get pork and steak any damn day of the week. But man, I tried the pork chop, and I've had it a couple times since then. And they had sort of a sweet potato sort of hash with it. And that pork chop was, unbelievable. I mean, it's probably about 2 inches thick. And, you know, it was something that I've told, come back to Kansas City, where we're known for our pigs and our beef here. And I was like, that is the greatest pork chop I've ever had. So of those four, I haven't tried the chicken, but man, the other three are great. What do you think? Let's start with you, Justin.
Yeah. So the drum was always my go-to, and the shrimp and grits. The three-course meal that they provide is probably, if you're coming in for the first time, the best way to go. You got your appetizer, you got your entree, and you got your dessert. It makes it pretty easy for you. They're all great. And then once you get a little bit more, I guess, savvy into it, or you want to keep, if you're going regularly and you want to try different things, I've kind of moved toward the a la carte because I'm not a big dessert guy, but I like the turtle soup that you should get as the appetizer. And then, you know, anything from any of the a la carte entrees you can get are always great with me.
Yeah, you got the Branzino last time.
Oh, the Branzino is fantastic.
Man, and the redfish. We've had the redfish multiple times.
That stuff is like crack cocaine to me, man. That redfish they have down there. Oh, my God.
I can. Redfish is a great fish down there. Peter, I put you over for saying good stuff about the pork chop, but what is your go-to meal there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I've ordered the pork chop more because it's hard not to order it. You see it, you're like, you know, it's going to be great every single time. And it's not just the chop, it's the whole plate that they put together. Like I said, I've done the duck several times, which is always a challenge for any restaurant to serve a, it's a half duck and it's delicious. You know, they just do a great job with it every single time. And I'm one of those people, like, why would you order chicken if you can get duck? So I've not done the chicken, the Branzino, the pan drum, all of them, just excellent. And Branzino is not an easy fish to cook in that it's, it overcooks quickly. And they, every time I've had it, it's always just been delicious.
Yeah, I the black and red fish I've had multiple times. I know and like you said, Justin, I mean, when I first started going there, a great introduction to it is to get the three course because you can get the bread pudding that is just so good pretty much anywhere you get it. It's different levels of great bread pudding down there, but that's so good there. I think we've had the creme brulee there as well. But yes, not every dessert is not something that I usually like to get when I'm out. For whatever reason, I'd rather probably drink my dessert. Yeah. So I don't usually get that, but, I've not gotten the Branzino and I was, you know, usually when I'm with Peter at restaurants, I'm usually pushed to the limit of trying some new stuff. But when I'm there with, you know, just my wife or whatever, I'll stay pretty much, you know, in the scared corner where I just try stuff that I normally get. But, I have, you know, shrimp and grits down there. Let's talk about that for a second. It is like, I mean, if you can't figure out how many damn versions of shrimp and grits you could have in the world. And there are so many different versions of it, whether it's some kind of just regular grits under the shrimp, or it goes into like a cake, like underneath the shrimp and grits, the shrimp, it's sort of a grit cake or a polenta cake. Sometimes, you know, they're so, you know, the shrimp varies in sizes. The sauce is a little different. And I think my wife, her friends, they all always go for the shrimp and grits. And like I said, those four things have been on the menu every single time. And that shows you like how, you know, again, if it's not broke, don't fix it. The only thing that has changed since I started, and Peter, you'd know it even more than Justin, is that the go-to appetizer to get for the sort of pick an appetizer, pick an entree, pick a dessert was always the crepes. It was always the shrimp and goat cheese crepes, which the last couple times I went, that's not on there. It's on their a la carte menu, but they have switched that out with the Tasso Carbonara, which is also good because someone got that in our party last time, Justin. I forgot who got that. It was either you or your wife or somebody had it. But I mean, the crepes is the only thing that's changed, but man, the wedge salad, their house salad is great. I've tried pretty much everything there. Is there anything that you guys have ever tried that wasn't good there?
No.
They do switch out their appetizers and their desserts. That seems to where they take on their specials and their other ideas. And every restaurant down there has turtle soup on the menu, some kind of gumbo, and shrimp and grits. And so you do have to have a standout one, and they do. They have a great version of shrimp and grits that is uniquely theirs, and they even put their recipes up on the menu. But to take on something like Tasso and to use it, you know, such a local ingredient that people are not always familiar with, especially as we were talking, it being a tourist area, that can challenge some people. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just pork. But it pairs extremely well with the pasta. They just did a great job with that recipe.
Now, Peter, let me ask you this. So the two times I've had the Branzino, one was a whole fish, and they served it filet at Muriel's. Is there one that's more prominent than the other and how they serve that?
It's often has to do with time of year of how big they are, as to what you're going to get. It's an oily fish. I mean, they almost look like giant sardines. So yeah, it's just where they're sourcing them from and time of year more than anything.
Another question to our chef Peter here. Peter, like when I got the pork chop the first time, I have never had to order a pork chop like make mine medium well or whatever, because it's just not something I've ever had to do anywhere. But when I got that pork chop, because it is so thick, like what I said, when I started cutting it, it was totally awesome. And then you get to about maybe, I don't know, an inch from the bone, maybe an inch and a half from the bone. And then it starts getting a little more rare. And I was shocked because I've never had a pork chop served that way. Is that pretty normal? I mean, do you have to tell, is that something that you would be asked to like, hey, tell them well done? Or, I mean, I like rare meat. I just wasn't used to that.
You know, you can ask them to have it more well done. That's the thing with pork now. They bred trichinosis out of pork sometime in the 90s. And that was the big thing. That was what everybody was worried about. And that's why you had to cook pork to such a higher temperature. But they got rid of it. It's just there was an industry thing. Then they really focused on breeding it out of the U.S. hogs. And they've managed to keep it out. So, yeah, you can eat it as a medium well. I don't know if I'd eat medium rare. Just I don't know if the texture would be what something I'd want. But a medium or medium well pork is delicious.
Now, anything that do you guys have a appetizer or dessert that you just have to have every time? I know you mentioned the soups and like gumbo. I think my wife always gets the gumbo there, but something, I mean, I always get the bread pudding there, but I have found that, you know, with our parties and everyone that goes down there and everyone's pretty much a big foodie, we've tried pretty much every single thing there. Is there anything that you would recommend to people that have never been there before what to get the first time?
So I like the turtle soup. You know why? Because it's hard to find turtle soup and people don't realize how delicious it is. So a lot of people are like, turtle soup? Oh, no, I can't have turtle soup. But it's delicious. They serve it up very well. That would be my go-to, just if you want to try something that if you're on vacation, you're from Kansas City, when are you getting turtle soup again? If you're coming from Cincy, get the turtle soup.
I agree. Peter, what about you?
On their menu, that tasso carbonara on the appetizer side. On the dessert side, you know, I think people kind of break between, you know, if you're getting dessert, it's the first question. But then the next one, chocolate or not chocolate.
Sure.
That's kind of the gist. So that the chocolate pecan tart they do is excellent. They also talking about consistency. Creme brulee is something that a lot of restaurants make, don't do a great job with consistency. Either they overcook it and it gets that scrambled egg texture to it, or rubbery, or they don't heat the sugar right. And it's either not caramelized enough or it's burnt, which again, you're talking a matter of a few degrees, 5 to 6 degrees is the difference between it being undercooked and burnt. Wow. Never had an issue with how they've done their brulee down there. And I think it's probably because they go through so much of it. They just, it's a developed skill.
But much like making a good roux, like you just get used to how deep, how dark you're going to get. You know, something cool also about Muriel's, if you're down there different times of the year, they always participate in every one of the food festivals down there, as far as like the culinary menus during the hot summer months, or like I mentioned before, the one time I went down there, I think it was with Garrett a couple years ago, they had there's a tomato, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, but the Creole tomato is only the bread, this variety in Louisiana, and it's only for a short period of time. And so they have the Creole Tomato Festival there. And so in honor of that, they had the Creole Tomato Festival menu that you could have on the side if you did not want their regular menu. So I thought that was cool. So one year I was like, I've had all their stuff, let's try that. And it was, you have to really like tomatoes, and you better have your acid reflux medicine ready, because there's a lot of tomatoes going down your gullet when you get that. But it was really good. I mean, would I do it again? Probably not, because I'm not the biggest tomato guy. But the fact that they had, you know, you had your appetizer, your main course was, God, it was crab with some tomatoes, you know, base on it. And then the dessert is the one that I remember the most, which was green tomato pie, which was really sliced thin pieces of tomato like you would do an apple pie, but it was, of course, green tomatoes and with the crust. And it was interesting. Like it was good. I don't know if I would have guessed it was even a tomato when I was eating it, but I just think it was cool that their staff is always willing to try new things. And like I said, because of what they are, who they are, where they are, they always are involved in all these festivals.
Well, that sounds like heaven to me, because I'm a big tomato guy. So I would I would probably eat everything on that menu.
That's in June, so you can go next time.
Okay.
Creole tomatoes are delicious. They are, unique to that area. It's an heirloom tomato that's down in that area. It is a tomato, though. I mean, for people who are listening, is it going to taste like something? No, it's a tomato. It does have its subtleties of an heirloom style. And I think also that's another one of those things with Muriel's that they get to do because of their menu, because they have this very traditional menu that they know back to front and front to back. It gives them the chance to do better experimentation with those festivals and the specials that they do, because they're not rewriting their menu every week, month, every couple of months. They know that. They know what they're ordering. They know what they're getting. They know how to make it all. They know their equipment. It's all set. So then they can have fun with things like making green tomato pie for dessert.
See, that's a great point, because I guess that's sort of like how my own business, I have a winery. So what I do is I like to have I've sort of decided through the years, I like to have 6 to 8 wines that I know are really good sellers for me, which would be the equivalent of Muriel's just always has their standards always ready to go. So if you like Muriel's, which obviously a lot of people do, you can go down there and get that anytime. We're not going to get rid of those. However, we will always try these new things on the side that it's going to be more of a niche audience. Less people are going to like it, but you get to pick your poison. And I like that, because so many other places, I've tried other places where I like the sheep's head fish, right? And I love it. And of course, that's a seasonal thing probably. And that's probably what's stopping it from being on the menu every time. But sometimes you just don't get that. And I'm only going there for that. And that stinks. And they had other good food, but Muriel's always has, at least their base things are always something that is there. And I guess that's why they have such a return visits from people, because they know what they're going to get. But the other thing that you mentioned earlier, Justin, is the allure of the haunted, there's so many things haunted in New Orleans, and it's a fun thing. I mean, there's a whole obviously subset of people having businesses based purely on haunted tours and the haunting of New Orleans and everything that's gone down there over hundreds of years. That is just a fascinating history. But the first time I went to Muriel's, we were walking around and I was shown around by our friends, and they wanted so badly to show us two things. The first thing was a table that is through this doorway to go up to stairs. There's a table set for 4 people, and it has a sign, and no one's sitting at it. It's for a ghost, and it's a sign that says, "This is a table for Pierre-Antoine Leparte Jourdan." And it says that, I had no idea who that was. I didn't know what it was for. And then they explained to me, well, it's the ghost that's here, and this is his table. And since he's here all the time, they always leave this table set for him. They'll change the water or whatever, but they just have it here. There's no food. It's just plates. And then you go upstairs, and you pass some of the other rooms, like I talked about, for the dining halls or the wine room, let's say. But then you get to this huge room that's just decked out in plush furniture, these couches all around it. It's got a red hue light in there, and it is known as the seance room. And we'll get to the history of that. But did you guys get to see that the very first time you went there? Because that's a big allure of Muriel's in New Orleans.
Yeah, I got to, I have a lot of pictures that we took the first time we were all hanging out in the seance room. I can't remember who was all on that trip, but it's kind of interesting. Like, how many restaurants in the United States or even worldwide have actual tables reserved for ghosts? To me, in itself, that's cool as hell. That's a reason to go there and eat by.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting, especially the real estate, Peter, is pretty high. So to have a seance room and in an area that you're just going to have for a ghost, that's saying something that you're going to be able to designate that much space for it.
Yeah, they're giving up prime real estate for that, and I commend them on that. And I'd love to see a seance in there. The first time we went in there, and they encourage you to go look around. This is not one of those restaurants where, like, oh, that's closed. So, you know, we have to get somebody to come let you in, or it's only if you're interested in renting the room. No, they're like, go take a look, see what, you know, see what it's all about. They want you to visit the entire restaurant.
Yeah, so we'd go get drinks at the bar downstairs, and the bar is sort of to the side. Like I said, there's a standing, you know, all these restaurants, these nice restaurants have a separate sidebar that you can go visit if you're not going to have a meal or maybe after dinner drinks. So you go over there and, you know, you get a drink there and you take the drink upstairs and you go either, you can go to the balcony, which is a cool place because, again, you can go to the second floor and see everything over in Jackson Square, or you can go to the seance room and do what we're talking about. Now, I looked into the history of the seance room. And virtually what it comes down to is that building in Jackson Square that Muriel resides at now was once owned by a guy, like I said, named Pierre Antoine Leparte Jourdan. It was his dream home. He loved it. It was the thing he adored the most. But he could never quench his thirst for the thrill and excitement of gambling, according to Muriel's website. He in 1814, he wagered his home in a poker game and lost it. It was his most treasured thing in life. So the shock of the loss was so intense that before having to vacate the premises and hand over his beloved treasure, he tragically committed suicide on the second floor in the same area where the seance room is today. So Muriel's will tell you, they still feel that Pierre Antoine Leparte Jourdan is with them today. He doesn't appear in human form. He appears as a glimmer of sparkling light wandering around the lounge. And, you know, they believe that the seance room is where Jourdan spends the majority of his time. Now, if you continue reading, you will see that they've also had people through the years see at the bar where people will just take a glass will just break against the wall 12 feet away, no one around it. They feel like there's more than just, you know, Mr. Jourdan there. But it's pretty cool to, you know, a lot of things are haunted, right? A lot of things are like, and it's always better when a haunting has a good story behind it, because if I know that the guy's name is Pierre and that he killed himself on the second floor, it's so much more meaningful when I'm trying to go think about the, you know, the imagination runs wild when you're in that seance room, right?
Yeah. I mean, how many guys, I mean, that was his true love, was that spot. And so rather than abandon it, losing it in a poker game, he decides to just become a permanent part of its folklore. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and the fact that it survived fires and wars and everything else is a real statement to that building. I mean, you can't say to just one business, but to the building that it has managed to just continue on and be used. As far as we can tell, it never was not used through its entire history.
Yeah, since 1721. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing location. And, like, you know, again, like, if you, I feel like anything down in New Orleans, you know, I was just talking with Justin about this, like, things in life are so much better when you just have an open mind and you're just, like, willing to just accept some things. I mean, you know, I, at events here, because of New Orleans, I have, for example, tarot card readers, because do I believe in tarot card readings? Not really. But I mean, I will open myself to them, you know, because it's just sort of fun to see that. And the hauntings down in New Orleans is one of those things that's sort of fun to sort of, you know, just leave your cynicism behind. And believe me, I have plenty of it, and just sort of have fun with it all. Because, you know, the seance room, like I said, if you are going to designate so much space to a fallen victim of suicide in your building, this is something that is unheard of, because they could have turned that into another private, you know, room or something, that, and maybe a second bar upstairs, something, anything.
Right.
But it's an amazing story, and it just goes with the allure of the location of that building. And obviously it's just sort of a microcosm of what New Orleans is all about anyway, because, you know, we have obviously haunted houses and haunted hotels in this area, you know, Crescent down in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, or even, I don't know if they say that about the Elms up in Excelsior Springs, but, you know, that everyone sort of has a haunting story. But in New Orleans, they just seem a little bit more real, just because of the history and just of the grunge history of everything that's gone down there.
And I'm a big believer in this, and it might just be from our years of experience in pro wrestling, Chris. I don't need a story to necessarily be true. I just want it to be entertaining. And New Orleans has that ability of murals with all their ghosts and stuff, give that ability to just be very entertaining. And you can choose to be a cynic, or you can choose to enjoy the experience. So to our faithful listeners, that is what I would recommend. Go in, breathe in the experience, breathe in the food, enjoy the stories, enjoy the time there.
Yeah, I think, so in closing, I would just say, Muriel's to me is a place that I know when I take new people down there, it is on a list to go to. You know, there's so many great restaurants that we'll be talking about in New Orleans and French Quarter specifically and surrounding areas. But, you know, if you really need to, you know, to me, Muriel's is sort of like it's on the trip I would take to my other family members that would come visit me when I was in New York. I have to go to the Empire State Building, the Statue of Liberty, you know, Times Square, stuff like that. Muriel's is sort of on that list for me for people because it's always a crowd pleaser. People like the menu. It's not so diverse and crazy that people are like, well, I usually eat chicken fingers, so I don't like eating anything on this menu. There's stuff that even people, you know, there's a steak, there's chicken, there's stuff like that. I mean, there were some, in the dying days of K. Paul, which was Paul Prudhomme's place, like we would stop there several times with people and there was a lot of wild game on there and a lot of people don't want to try that. So it was, unfortunately, I didn't get to go there because every time I went there, I was with people that didn't necessarily want to eat that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Muriel's doesn't have that. Muriel's has something for everybody. And I just think, again, crowd pleaser, everyone has enjoyed it a lot. If I had to get one meal, I would probably say get the shrimp and grits just because that's such a taste in New Orleans with the bread pudding. And, you know, I like the house salad, but the tasso or just get the a la carte shrimp and goat cheese crepes. Those are the best. And, you know, that's what I would get. And let's start with you, Justin. What would you tell people? I know how this ranks, but tell the people out there, where does this rank for you?
It's my number one.
Of course.
It is. It's number one. Unapologetic, touristy. I'm there. I'm a tourist. I'm throwing my dollars at it. It has everything I like about New Orleans. I love Jackson Square. I love the vibe, the feel of it. I love the food. I love the presentation. I love just the whole atmosphere about it. So, you know, you could argue there's, you know, better places to eat. Finn's, obviously. Commander's Palace, obviously. But just for all inclusive package, everything included, to me, I'm going Muriel's.
What about you, Peter?
You know, I've learned with New Orleans specifically to not rank restaurants. What I always say is when people ask, well, where do you suggest? I tell you what my favorites are, and that list changes and goes up and down, but Muriel's is always on my favorites list. That, like I said, their consistency, they are a classic New Orleans restaurant without being overly French. Some of them do that very, very well, and they saw not to be just another French restaurant in New Orleans, but much more a New Orleans restaurant. It is a great dining room. It is very comfortable. It can be packed, and you can still sit and talk to everybody at your table. You're not yelling at. There's not a lot of background noise that's causing problems. Temperature has always been comfortable in there. Not too hot. Yeah, I mean, we've been down there in the middle of the summer, and we've been down there in the middle of the winter. It's never too hot, never too cold. They really take care of making it, you know, great service, great food, always very welcoming. You get to be part of history in that building. And a theme that we've unknowingly touched on, but I think is important in most of these places that we talk about going to. You learn when you go to New Orleans that you think every great place is going to take care of every little detail. Muriel's has a great bathroom. It is clean and it is functional. That is not going to be everywhere you go in New Orleans.
That is correct.
And you will go to some really nice places that the bathroom is, you'll just wait to go somewhere else.
Well, yeah. So if it's only fair, we have to compare the Muriel's bathroom to Fritzl's bathroom. It is A to Z on that one. Okay. Yes, so, yeah. And you bring up a great point. If you go to the men's bathroom at Muriel's, never been to the girls' one, but if you go to the men's one, they have a humongous map of New Orleans back in, I don't know what era that, 1800s. I don't know. It is wall to wall map in there. And it's a very cool bathroom. And you're right. Yeah. You're right. Expect, you know, I'm not going to take my kids there, of course, but bathrooms in my life in the last, you know, 12, 15 years have been very important. And that is something I'm really glad you brought up the pisser there. Thank you.
Hell of a way to end that one.
It is one of my favorites as well. And Peter's right. It's hard to rank them. Justin is not worried about ranking it number one. He's always won't shut up about Muriel's. He loves it. We battle a little bit because I like GW Finn's food maybe slightly better, but overall package, I think Muriel's is it. And so it's a great place. And if you go to New Orleans, check it out right off Jackson Square, 801 Charter Street. Anyway, guys, I don't know what our next, you know, there's several things to kick around next time on the next episode. Napoleon House is a classic one, or, you know, maybe we go to another bar that we all like. I'm not sure, but we'll figure that out before the next show. Guys, anything else you want to close on?
Nah, stay tuned. Tell a friend.
There'll be something exciting because New Orleans is an exciting town.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there's so many things to talk about down there. Well, thanks for joining us. Check us out, NOLAOutsider.com. You can get the podcast anywhere that podcasts are available. And check us out on Facebook, Facebook.com/NOLAOutsider. We'll see you next time, next podcast, when we talk about our favorite town, New Orleans.
Thanks for listening to the NOLA Outsider podcast. We'd love to hear about your experiences in the greatest city in the world. Email us at OutsiderNOLA@gmail.com. Also, check us out on Facebook at Facebook.com/NOLAOutsider or visit NOLAOutsider.com. See you next time on NOLA Outsider.